1999, talking about how the banks are going to take over our country. We have the book, The Money Creators by Gertrude Krugman, and the people with the big bucks did everything they could to suppress the book. And then, of course, we have the Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Professor Sutton at number 1-800-544-8927.
It's no secret that Genesis Communications Network depends on listeners like you. Now you can do even more to hear Genesis shows in your area. Simply call your local radio stations and tell them about your favorite GCN programs. It's easy. Log on to GCNlive.com or call us toll free, 877-807-4048. Make a difference. Call your local stations and contact us through affiliate relations at GCNlive.com or call 877-807-4048. Call today.
On there was a
have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors...
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and well, for the next half hour or so, there'll be the views of Representative Charles Key. And Charles is in the legislature in Oklahoma. Of course, we knew Charles very well during the Oklahoma City bombing investigation, and he certainly led that effort to get to the bottom of what happened there. And, of course, he was targeted by the establishment. They got him out of the legislature. But he didn't give up. He came back again. He's now one of the leading forces within the state's legislature. And there in the state of Oklahoma, they're working to get certain resolutions through proposing the 10th Amendment and the fact that the federal government does not have the right to do most of what it's doing. Charles, thank you so very much for being with us again.
Very glad to be with you anytime.
Why don't you just go ahead and just sort of lay out what's going on in Oklahoma, how the legislation's going, certainly whether it's gotten through the Senate, what the governor is going to do, and then, of course, what is happening in other states that are beginning to say, look, we have a constitution. You guys in Washington, D.C. are violating the constitution and taking away our rights. So what's really going on that we're not hearing about here across America?
Well, I filed the 10th Amendment resolution in 2007, I believe it was. I'm kind of losing track of time myself, but a couple of years ago, and then it kind of got picked up by a number of other legislators around the country. It was written about by Walter Williams and others, and started a wildfire of interest from people from all walks of life, from different parties, different political persuasions. People that all have one thing in common, and that is they believe in what this country was founded upon, which is a liberty philosophy, the philosophy of individual liberty, and that rights come from the Creator, and they're inherent within each of us. They do not come from government. And the 10th Amendment resolution affirmed that and affirmed what the Constitution says, which is that the government is created by the people. The government was created to only do certain specific things, and that they continue, the federal government continues to violate the Constitution and their role according to the Constitution over and over and over again until it's threatening our very country. And so we filed that resolution. We passed it in Oklahoma. It's passed now in a number of other states and filed in many others. And now there's additional legislation similar to it that affirms the sovereignty of the state and constitutional rights of the people, like the Second Amendment and others. And it's the impetus behind what we see going on in the country today, in addition to the fact that people are recognizing the government has reached a level of being out of control, that it is threatening everything, not only their liberties, but now it's threatening their very existence. And so there's an opportunity here. There's an opportunity for us to address this problem with the federal government and government in general being out of control. We have an opportunity like few people have in their lifetimes to actually bring about some real positive change. I understand that there are some that are following what's going on in the states and what's expected to happen in this next legislative session in states all over this country, starting the end of this year and the first part of next year. And it's estimated there'll be over 100 bills filed that will deal with reestablishing the role of the Constitution in our country and the state rights.
And I think that is really exciting. You know, we have people calling all the time. They're discouraged. Things are getting worse. They're going to get worse. They're going to have to get a lot worse. But well, people are beginning to wake up. We see that in the town halls. Be encouraged, ladies and gentlemen. And Charles is on the leadership of this. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Representative Charles Key of the great state of Oklahoma. I was back there a couple of weeks ago, enjoyed our short stay there, heard Charles Key talk and sort of renewed a friendship that we had some years ago when he was leading the battle to try to get to the truth of what really happened when they bombed the Murrah building, the federal building in Oklahoma City. Well, now Charles is back in the legislature, and he's leading a different battle, and perhaps even a much more important battle, trying to get the various states to pass resolutions and affirm the belief in the Constitution. And certainly Oklahoma's passed the resolution, and many other states are passing resolutions. Charles is just saying that as many as 100 states this coming year will actually have resolutions reaffirming a belief in the Constitution. Now, you have to understand that the people in Washington, D.C. hate the Constitution because it limits what they can do, and they want unbridled power. It's all about power. It's all about centralizing things in Washington, D.C. And what we need, of course, is to get the resolutions through the states. We need to get governors who have the courage to stand up and to support what the legislatures and what the people want. Certainly, what sort of reaction are you getting from your current governor there in Oklahoma?
Well, the current governor in Oklahoma vetoed the 10th Amendment resolution, if anybody can imagine that. And when that happened, the press called me and wanted to see what I had to say about it. And I said, yeah, gosh, it's like vetoing the Constitution itself. And I believe it is. And our governor actually did that. What we did in response was we filed another bill without going into great, you know, parliamentary procedural detail to explain what we did, but it effectively overrode his veto of the first bill, and that passed, and we passed it in both the House and the Senate, and it became law in Oklahoma. But it's a good example of what we see in Washington, D.C., not just to point the finger at Democrats or liberals, because they all don't think the same way on Constitution and civil liberties, but many of them do. Unfortunately, there's a lot of Republicans that give lip service to the Constitution, but they effectively feel the same way. They're really not for the Constitution and this system of government that was originally created in our country. They would veto legislation that affirms and guarantees the rights that we've all enjoyed and hold dear for all of our lifetimes and for the history of this country. So we've got a governor like that in Oklahoma, but we're real fortunate. We've got a lot of good legislators. And
Hold that thought for just a moment. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, I guess is Representative Charles Key, and Charles certainly is saying that in Oklahoma they have a governor who didn't want to go along with this 10th Amendment resolution, didn't want to go along with proclaiming states' rights that the federal government is not all-powerful, but of course, he vetoed the legislation last year, but they put another piece of legislation and went around him. But there's going to be an election for governor next year. We're going to have a Senator Bragdon, who's going to be running for governor next year. He'll be our guest this evening. And he fully supports this concept of states proclaiming their right to freedom. What the federal government does is, of course, they go ahead and they get all this money from, or they can actually print the money, and then they use it to bribe the states to get them to go along with their programs. This is how the system works. We're losing our freedom because they're paying the politicians off and the governors and people with our tax money. So how are we going to get around that? How are we going to get people in office, Charles, who really believe in freedom as you and I do?
Well, I think one of the things we have to do is we have to become clear and be committed to the Constitution ourselves again. I suspect a lot of people that listen to your show are people like that, but you know, we can't just expect our elected officials to follow the Constitution. We have to be committed to it ourselves first and know what it says and know the history of this country and the Constitution and where these rights came from and how this system of government developed before we can really require and be able to see and people running for office, whether they're first-timers or they've been there before, so that we can see in them whether or not they really are people that will stand up for the Constitution and for what's right. Because it gets pretty difficult sometimes to hear all the rhetoric and all the promises and the claims, and it's hard to know who's really somebody you can trust and who's telling the truth. And the way to do that is to have to first understand why the Constitution was written like it was, why all the things that were included in it were included, the philosophies behind it. And if you don't know that, then it's easy to fall for arguments or rationales that, well, that was for the times back then when it was first created, this country was first started, and the Constitution is outdated now, or some argument like that. That's absolutely not true. It's a false argument. It's just as valid today. It's even more valid today than it was back then. And as time goes on, that doesn't change the validity and the importance of the Constitution and these principles that this country was founded upon. And we have to relearn that. We have to reclaim it. And it has to become a personal thing. And then we have to find those candidates that are running for office that represent them, that kind of emulate those principles. If we don't have any, if you don't have some that's running your district, if the state rep, state senator, or federal level, then we have to communicate with those people that are running and let them know in no uncertain terms what you expect, and you expect them to follow the Constitution, and you will be watching them. And if they don't, that you will be working against them. And the more people that stand up and do that, much like we've seen the people in the Tea Parties and the 9/12 groups and other organizations really come out in great numbers, do so, it'll put the fear in a lot of people running for office and a lot of people that are holding office to do what the constituents want them to do, but it will also give a lot of people that really would like to do what's right, would like to follow the Constitution, but they don't have the courage. And I don't say that meaning there's any excuse for that, but it will give those people more courage to do what's right. And you know what? Right here in Oklahoma, since this last 6 months and year has gone by, as there's been more publicity about things that are going on at the federal level and international level, we've had some state legislators that have come out and said they are going to introduce legislation and or support legislation that is going to reaffirm the constitutional rights that we have and protect the Constitution in our state. And so we're starting to see that here in Oklahoma, and I bet that's happening in other places around the country. So all these things are trying times we live in. Of course, there's a lot of high anxiety right now, but we have to see it as an opportunity, because it really is a great opportunity for all of us, because people are starting to wake up, starting to get concerned to a level that they're paying attention and they're ready to do something, and we have to take advantage of that and inform and educate people and help channel into groups that are that have been fighting all along, or a lot of these new groups that are forming, so that they can channel their energy and their actions in the right way to make it effective.
And, you know, Sidney, I've been at this for a long time. We, Chris, what we do on our program is every month, on all of our programs, we have people from the Institute of the Constitution that will tell people how to learn about the Constitution and how to teach it to others. People have to understand that there are people who want to take away our freedom. There have always been people who wanted a dictatorship in America. They were here when America was founded, represented by Alexander Hamilton and some of his friends. But there are those who wanted freedom and were willing to fight for freedom. And they were eventually able to defeat Hamilton and that ilk. But, of course, we have exactly the opposite in Washington, D.C. We have people who are totally dedicated to centralizing all power with Washington, D.C. And this is a violation of the Constitution. If they want to change our form of government, then let's amend the Constitution. But they don't want to amend it. They just simply want to act as if it wasn't the law of the land. We go ahead and we have everybody swear to uphold the Constitution, and then they consistently violate it and nobody calls them. I think we have to start calling the people in Washington, D.C. who violate the Constitution just what they are. Don't you really feel that these people are subverting our Constitution?
Yes, I agree with that 100%, and I've started doing that myself and encouraging and telling people that we need to start calling those people what they are, the federal government itself, what they are. They are lawbreakers. They're nothing more than anyone else that would go out and break the law. Because what they've done is they've over and over and over again passed, I don't even want to call them laws, and we need to stop doing that. They've passed legislative acts that violate the Constitution. And you cannot have two bills, two laws that violate each other. One has to be superior. Even the courts have understood that fact when they've stated that and reaffirmed that in some of their decisions. Not that because they have said it makes it so, it's because they've recognized the truth in that, that you can't have two laws that contradict each other. One has to be superior over the other. And the Supreme Court, the supreme law of the land, the Constitution, has always been recognized as the law that's above all other laws. So you have a federal government, and you have, in a lot of cases, state government that are passing laws, passing legislative acts, and other government actions that are in violation of the Constitution, and those are no laws, and when they do that, they break the law. They're lawbreakers. We have to call them what they are. Even the individuals, we have to call them what they are, lawbreakers. But they need to either stop breaking the law or suffer consequences of being kicked out of office, or who knows, maybe someday in the future, maybe stronger action than that. Maybe charges will be brought against them. There are a lot of people, even legislators, that are exploring that possibility of bringing charges, bringing new laws to put on the books to hold people that are in public office accountable when they do things that violate the supreme law of the land, the Constitution.
Well, I think we're living in exciting times, you know. I mean, I certainly think that things are happening today that we never could have imagined happening before. We know that back in Washington, D.C., like certainly Ron Paul, Congressman Ron Paul has over 280 people who are supporting his resolution or bill, I think it's 1207, H.R. 1207, to audit the Federal Reserve System. All the major banks, we're talking about J.P. Morgan, Deutsche Bank, Hong Kong, Singapore, HSBC, I think it is, HSBC, they're all the major banks have sent a message saying, why, if you audit the Federal Reserve System, why it could bring down the whole financial system. Well, why don't they want the Federal Reserve System audited? Because they own the Federal Reserve System. It's a private stock company, and the last thing they want is for the American people to know how they've been fleecing the public. But I think the people are beginning to wake up like I've never seen before. Is that your impression, Charles?
That is my impression. We've got to keep it going. We can't think that, oh, well, maybe things are going to get corrected now. People have been sitting back for a long time waiting to see what's going to happen or seeing what others are going to do. I was talking to a group just a few days ago, and I admitted to them, I said, I hate to admit to this that I'm getting ready to say to you, but as I think back when I first started really learning about this country and the Constitution at a time when I was starting to become mature enough that I could understand it, I was about in my 18, 19, 20 years old, and I attended a number of constitutional seminars by Cleon Skousen, and that was about 35 years ago. That's been a long time, so I hate to admit that because it dates me. It's old.
Well, don't feel bad. We have Joel Skousen on with us twice every week. This is Cleon's nephew. And he, of course, doesn't necessarily always talk about the Constitution, but coming from the Skousen perspective, he does a magnificent job, a great patriot, and as Cleon Skousen was. And I can remember, Charles, going to Cleon Skousen's lectures where he taught us about the Constitution and rekindled that belief in liberty that, well, it was just going out that time 20 or 30 years ago. Let's get it, that those embers reignited and burning brightly and take America back. We'll be right back. Okay, Charles, well, certainly, are there any things that our listeners could do to help you and the other legislatures who are trying to get something accomplished?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of activity. There's a lot of things going on. There's a lot of legislators that are really starting to wake up, take action, and time will tell, you know, just what it means. I think we'll see next year what it really means to us in regards to this movement, as we're calling it, to reaffirm states' rights and Constitution. But I'm very hopeful. But I think we're probably going to see some really, and I think it's all, I'm not saying I think it's all going to be a bed of roses and a fun time that we're all going to have. And, but I think that we're going to see people stand up to the federal government like we've never seen in a long, long time. And that's going to be exciting, like you said, for people like us, because we've been hoping that something would happen for quite a long time, that people would wake up. And it probably was just inevitable. There had to be, you know, a major crisis to wake a lot of people up. But it's happening, and I think we're going to see a lot of good things come out of it. We'll probably see a lot more bad happen also.
Well, you know, it's always been my contention that as long as things were good, as long as we had so much money, as long as you could go out and borrow anything, money and buy anything you wanted to and get a new car regularly and live on debt and of course, people aren't going to be concerned. Only when times get a little rough, and believe me, times are getting rough increasingly all across America. Only when things like that happen do people really begin to evaluate what's really important, things like God and family and country. And it may be very well that even though certainly what's taking place is going to hurt an awful lot of people, maybe this is the best thing that ever happened to our country because, of course, people are suddenly... they're suddenly getting very upset with what's going on in Washington, D.C. Here in California, where I live, they're getting very, very upset about what's going on in California. I think we've got almost 12% unemployment, and that's what they'll admit to. It's probably much higher than that. But I think that we have to understand that maybe this is God's means of getting our attention.
Yeah, it's hard to know what God has planned, as you know better than I do, that or as well as I do or anyone else, you know, there's a lot of times we thought God was, the end times were here and that God was trying to do this or that, and time goes by and we find out that was not the case, like with Hitler. There's a lot of people right now, a lot of my Christian friends, they think, well, this certainly is the end times. I just know that it is. I just, you know, feel certain about it. Well, I'm tired of Christians falling back on that crutch, thinking, well, it's over and there's nothing can be done about it, except wait. You know, I've got my ticket to go to heaven because I'm saved, and so I'm going to sit back and wait for Jesus to take us home. Well, the fact is, we don't know that Jesus is coming back now. And we need to get off our butts and do something about it. It's amazing that such a small, small number of people can enslave 300 and something million people so easily. You know, if we would just get up enough in numbers, and I hope that we're doing that, I hope that's what we're seeing, then we can stop this thing real quick. We can correct it very quickly, or at least, you know, move significantly in the direction of correcting it.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Charles was just saying that a lot of his friends are evangelical Christians. They keep saying, well, these are the end times, the rapture is going to come, and so I don't have to be involved. But my remark, my response to that is, look, these may very well be the end times, and Christ may be coming, but what happens if he arrives 30 years after America's fallen and your whole family has been slaughtered? What are you going to say then? And because, of course, the rain falls on the just and the unjust, and the Christians in Germany believed it was the end times. They had nothing to worry about because Hitler was the Antichrist, and Christ was coming at any time. And you go to Germany today, and the churches are empty because they know that the ministers lied to them. Well, somebody's called in, has a question. They want to know if you have heard anything at all about the possibility of mandatory vaccination for this swine flu. Do you know anything at all about that?
Well, I keep hearing about it, but I would like to make a comment. When we went to the break, I was talking about how, looking back over 30, 35 years, I feel like I'm aging myself, which I am. But the point that I was really making about that is that for that 35 years, as I look backwards, I've heard people say that, well, if we don't do something about it, if we don't fix it, it keeps going in this direction, meaning, you know, government growth, government intrusion into our affairs and violation of our rights and the Constitution, that, you know, 10, 20, 30 years down the road, boy, it's going to really be bad. It's going to be some kind of version of too late or really bad. Well, I hate to admit it, but it's been 35 years. It doesn't just mean that I'm getting a lot older than I was 35 years ago, but it means 35 years have gone by, and there's no more wiggle room. There's no more time to think, well, we still have 5 or 10 years before we have to really do something, because the time has already passed. The time is now, and there's no more time to wait or to hope that something will happen fix all this. We have to fix it ourselves. And we can fix it if we just will.
Amen to that. And of course, it's always been said that the people who want one world government, at the end, you know, they can go work very slowly for a long period of time, but at the end, they're going to have to rush naked towards the end line, towards the finish line, and that's what they're doing now. I mean, basically, this is all about a world government. That's why they're sending our manufacturing, our jobs overseas. That's why General Motors just opened up this last week and announced they're opening a new $250 million plant over there in communist China. Who paid for it? Why, Uncle Sam paid for it. We gave him $50 billion to create new jobs, and they are creating new jobs in China. Understand, ladies and gentlemen, this is what it's about. They're moving rapidly, but there is an awakening here, and I agree with Charles. I'm enthusiastic about it. If you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question for Representative Charles Key, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Charles can't stay with us too much longer, but if you have a question, why, give us a call right now. But we are living certainly in the most dangerous, exciting, definitive times, because, of course, we will either lose our freedom in the very near future, or we will certainly take America back. And, of course, it'll never be the same society it was before the crash. Believe me, we're never going to go back to this area of prosperity. We're already in the process of simply sending our wealth overseas. That's what the long-range plan is, and that's what they're doing. But at least if we can maintain our freedom, freedom is a lot more important, as far as I'm concerned, than prosperity. Charles, you know, certainly, what is your message you'd like to leave with our listeners today? Or do you have any website or anything you'd like to put out for us?
Well, unfortunately, I haven't been able to get a website up and going. I've got one, but there's not much to it. But I would like to say this, that, you know, I'm just going through the first IRS audit I've ever been through in my life. And if I didn't already think like I do now, I would be so angry and upset because of what I've observed in this IRS audit. People ought to wake up and realize how much waste and how much control the government has over them. And I know that a lot of people just understand, or they think they have some understanding of how much power the government has, because so many people are afraid when you just say the words IRS. But you know, the waste and the control that we have in government, just if you look at the IRS, is so unbelievable that we would let it get this far. We need to take this country back and straighten it out.
Amen to that. Because no man's life or property is safe as long as the government can come and look over your shoulder. And, you know, if you talk to any federal agent and they accuse you of lying, you go to prison. They can lie all they want to. It's perfectly all right for them to lie, but they can accuse you of saying something, so you really can't even talk to a federal agent, because you never know when he's going to lie about what you said. Unfortunately, this is what happens when the nation turns against God. Hang on, we'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Charles, I know you can't stay very much longer, but we have somebody calling in from Oklahoma. We got Bill from Oklahoma. Hi, Bill. Do you have a question or comment for our guest, Representative Charles Keyes?
I have a question for Representative Keyes. I'm very grateful to Representative Keyes, first of all, for the 10th Amendment resolution. I'm sorry that our governor did not have the wisdom and the gumption or whatever it takes to sign it into law, but still we put the feds on notice, and now it's with this swine flu and the forced vaccination, or at least with the pandemic level 6, where we turn our rights over to the World Health Organization, and possible forced vaccination, and we need the right as to self-shield, and on a state level, you know, we need to exercise that state authority in the 10th Amendment resolution we passed, and say, you know, our on a state level, no, we won't do this.
Well, I agree with that, and I appreciate your comments and your call. You know, on the 10th Amendment resolution, it's gotten a lot of good reception and positive commentary and what have you, but there are a lot of people that have been disappointed because they think it doesn't have enough teeth. It doesn't have any teeth. And I understand what they're saying when they've said that, but I want to say this about the 10th Amendment resolution. You know, in this country, when we do things legally or politically, we go through a certain process. And the 10th Amendment resolution represents that very first process that's common in any legal action or political action, and that is first giving notice. We seldom ever go and just, for example, a landlord, when a tenant violates the lease agreement, doesn't just go in all of a sudden, back a truck up, and run them out of the property. They have to give them notice first, and that's the way it is in most business, legal, and political situations. And that's what the 10th Amendment resolution is. It's first standing up, affirming what the law is and what the truth is and what the facts are, and then putting those that are violating the law on notice. Now the time has come, and of course it's already happened this year in many states, where additional legislation has been introduced, like the bills that were passed in Montana and Tennessee, introduced in Texas, Utah, and some other states. Arizona and others.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, our guest is a is Representative Charles Keyes, just who's sort of led the movement there in Oklahoma to get the 10th Amendment resolution passed. I wonder if it's just coincidence and now he's being investigated by the IRS. Do you think that the government might come after people who would be trying to take freedom back and prevent all power from being centralized with the central government? Probably just a coincidence. We have certainly a bill calling in from Oklahoma. And if you have out there, right, Charles will only be with us a few minutes more, but if you have a question or comment, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Charles, did you have anything else you wanted to say before we see if Bill has anything to say before we let him go?
Well, to Bill and my fellow Oklahoman there, he knows that here in Oklahoma, we had a bill passed this year that is going to put to a vote of the people in Oklahoma whether or not they want English to be the official language of the state of Oklahoma. We passed that bill that now will put it to a vote of the people. Well, our U.S. Attorney General, Eric Holder, sent a letter to our state attorney general to tell him that if we pass that law, we'll lose a lot of federal money, basically threatening the state and trying to influence the voters of Oklahoma that the federal government will not continue to give them money as if it were theirs in the first place.
And I think this is a beautiful example of what we're talking about. The real goal is a one-world government. They do not want an English-speaking nation. They do not want an English culture. They wanted a multilingual, multicultural nation. This is why they've moved year after year to prevent English from being the official language of this country, because these people hate America. When you understand that, it all makes sense. That's why, because here we're having to borrow $3 or $4 billion every day, and we're still giving money to countries throughout the world to maintain corrupt dictators in power, like in Zimbabwe. We're keeping Mugabe in power through humanitarian aid, and we're giving money to North Korea. It's always humanitarian aid to keep the corrupt dictators in power. My goodness, has anybody ever stopped and questioned if we'll keep those corrupt dictators in power in those other countries? What will they one day do here? Bill, do you have anything else to ask before we let you go?
Well, yes, I do. I still have my question about self-shielding on this vaccination. You know, whether if it does come down to a mandatory deal, and I understand that I'm not in that age group. I'm 59 years old, but... vaccines in general, and especially this new one with the squalene in it, is the possibility of Gillian's Barre's or Lou Gehrig's disease. I'd take the flu any day over either one of those.
All right.
And I believe most rational people would too, you know. That ought to be my decision to make and not some bureaucrat. And that if I promise to stay home and not go out in public, you know, then I ought to have the right to do that. And I would hope that my state government and my sheriff would protect that right.
All right, let's see what President Key says. Is there any talk there in Oklahoma of making this mandatory?
Well, there's just the talk coming from, you know, basically the federal government, but there is a lot of talk in the state and locally about doing something to counter that possible move that might be made at the federal level to make it mandatory. You know, I think first we need to recognize again that the federal government doesn't have the constitutional authority to do any of these things related to swine flu or any other type of disease or what have you, and vaccines. And so there's a lot of talk about taking some action to do that. I think it's one of these issues that most people are afraid to touch or talk about, meaning elected officials. But I think if we see something like that happen, I think you'll see at least some in Oklahoma and probably others in other parts of the country that are state legislators and in other public positions that will stand up and speak out against that. So,
well, I think
time will tell.
Anyway, Charles, can you stay a little bit longer? Should we? Do you have to go?
I think I really have to go.
All right. Well, I appreciate so much you coming on, and I hope we can get you on again. Please, if anything comes up, give me a call. I do what I do to give people like you a voice, and I appreciate everything you're doing for the people there in Oklahoma, everything you're doing for our country.
I'm glad to come back with you again. I appreciate you. Thank you.
God bless. Bye-bye. Okay, well, that was Representative Charles Key, and we do hope you enjoyed the program. And let me just tell you a little bit. Then we're going to do open lines the rest of this hour. So if you have a question or comment, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Now, Bill called in, and he says, you know, this vaccine is going to contain squalene. Well, the truth of the matter is, we don't know what is in the vaccine, and they aren't about to tell us. On the 26th, which was just 5 days ago, I called the Public Relations Division of GlaxoSmithKline and asked them, what's going to be in the vaccine? Is it going to contain squalene? And I got somebody from there, and they said, well, the Centers for Disease Control hasn't decided yet. And I said, look, you mean you got 6 weeks before we start the nationwide vaccine program? And you mean you don't know what's going to be in the vaccine? No, we don't know what's going to be in the vaccine. But, you know, because they're going to decide, they're testing the vaccine. Now, you can't test a vaccine for a few weeks on a small number of people and tell what the long-range effect of that vaccine will be. So then I wasn't very happy with the information I got from GlaxoSmithKline, so I called the Centers for Disease Control. And you know, it's nice to have a doctor before your name. I don't usually use it, but certainly in this instance, why I called the Centers for Disease Control, told them I was with the medium, and I gave them my doctorate background, my physician background, and so then they would not let me talk to somebody from the Public Relations Division at CDC. But they sent me an email, and essentially this is what it said. We don't know what's going to be in the vaccine. We certainly, the CDC is considering putting fluid, F-L-U-A-D. It's a squalene adjuvant. It's an oil adjuvant that has been licensed in Europe for use in people over 65 years of age. It is not licensed in Europe to be given to pregnant women or to children, and there are no studies that show it's safe. It is not licensed at all here in the United States, because every time they've used these oil adjuvants, they've had disastrous effects. So the CDC is taking a few hundred people, and they're going to test them for a few weeks, and sometime between now and the middle of October, they're going to make the decision as to whether to give hundreds of millions of people in the United States and throughout the world, and the vaccine, the H1N1 vaccine, will contain the adjuvant fluad, or the squalene. And so basically, what they're going to do, and I learned this last weekend, I mean, you can't get a straight answer from anybody, but there was a meeting at the hospital, and there was a woman there who had been briefed by the CDC to come around and try to raise a support all in our community so that everybody will take this flu vaccine. And she said what the plan is if they decide, remember now, 6 weeks from now, this program begins. 6 weeks, the middle of October, a nationwide campaign is going to be launched, and they haven't decided what's going to be in the vaccine. What they're going to do is, at the last minute, if they decide to add the adjuvant, then they'll mix it in. It won't be in the vaccine. They'll have add the adjuvant there, and then they can just mix it in and give it in. Then we'll just wait and see what happens, you know. It's the greatest experiment of all time, only it's not an experiment. They know what happens with the oil adjuvants, because there's a book, it's called Vaccine A, but I think it's Gary Matsumoto, but anyway, we have a four-tape set called Vaccine A. I don't know whether we still carry the book, but we do carry the four-tape set. You need to hear it, because they gave these vaccines back in the early 1950s to our military, and so many of the soldiers got a Lou Gehrig's disease or other autoimmune diseases and destroyed their lives, that they gave it up. And then they used the same experimental vaccine in the Gulf War. We know this was the experimental vaccine, because the University of Tennessee tested the people who came back from the Gulf War. And if they had Gulf War illness, they had antibodies to squalene. If they didn't take the didn't have Gulf War illness. They didn't have antibodies to squalene. So they're lying to the American people. It was a great experiment, and they destroyed the lives of several hundred thousand men, and over almost 80,000 of them were dead. Of the 690,000 we used to set over to Europe, to the Gulf War, almost 80,000 are no longer living. We have these reports from the Veterans Administration. If you get anything from us and you specifically request that, we'll be glad to send you the page. That's the page from the Veterans Administration report as of a year ago, January. They have not updated this. Why? Because I suspect that so many are dying. And of course, they don't know. Those are only the ones they followed of the 690,000 we sent overseas. There are a lot of them they haven't followed because they wouldn't go back to the Veterans Administration. I suspect the death rate of the people who took the vaccine is far higher than that. And then, of course, they put the squalene into the anthrax vaccine. And whole units that took the vaccine simply were closed down. And so they eventually were forced, of course, to stop the anthrax vaccine. But why would they do that? Because there are people out there who really believe in population control. They really want to kill off the majority of the people in the world. It was in June of this year in New York City that a group of billionaires met. There was the mayor of New York, Bloomberg, and then, of course, David Rockefeller was there, and George Soros, and Ted Turner, and Warren Buffett, who's spending hundreds of millions of dollars on population control throughout the world. He's also financing the program to vaccinate a little black children and brown children throughout the world with mercury-laden vaccines to destroy their fertility. They know exactly what they're doing. Of course, Warren Buffett was there, Oprah was there, and they were talking about their plan for population control. And I would simply ask the question, is the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, implementing their program today? Because swine flu is not that serious a problem. It's a very mild form of influenza, and it doesn't kill anywhere near as many people as seasonal influenza. As of the 26th of August of this year, that's just a little over 5 days ago, less than 150 healthy people had died here in the United States. The figure was 152 in all, but 80% of them had other major medical problems. So you have to understand, this is a non-problem. As of the 12th of August, I think it's about 1,400 people in the entire world had died of swine flu, confirmed cases, and yet we lose almost 3,000 people day from malaria, which could be prevented by the use of DDT, but they won't allow that because malaria saves too many lives. Alexander King, the co-chairman of the Club of Rome, which is the European counterpart of the Council on Foreign Relations, Alexander King wrote in his memoirs that the DDT was saving too many lives. People weren't dying of malaria, so we had to outlaw it. And the same thing is true with AIDS. When I was leading the battle to use standard public health approaches to try to stop the AIDS epidemic, I couldn't understand why people didn't want to do what was logical to save human lives. And it took me a little while to realize there were people there who didn't want to save human lives, who wanted as many people to die as possible, because this disease is targeted at blacks. And almost half of the people who've died in the United States are black, and there are people who hate blacks. And, of course, they hate humanity, but they hate blacks more. And this certainly goes back to the writings of Madame Blavatsky and the Theosophists and all of the occultists and Adolf Hitler. They were all in this thing together, along with Thomas Edison and certainly Arthur Conan Doyle, and you go down the list of the people involved with Theosophy, Henry Ford. Why do you think Henry Ford circulated the scurrilous, protocols, the learned elders of Zion? Because he hated the Jews. That was one of the basic tenets of the Theosophists, and he was associated with them, and with Thomas Edison, who was a Theosophist, and they tapped into this supernatural power. And, of course, that's why they ended up so wealthy and so powerful and pushing anti-Semitism. And it's the Jews who are behind everything, and it really isn't at all. It is these people from the occult who are behind all the things that are going on today. But are we seeing the fulfillment of a plan? There is no logical reason for this worldwide swine flu immunization, especially when the disease is as mild as it is. Now, maybe they have some other things that have been engineered in the biological military biological laboratories. There are articles up on the internet. Just type in, go to your search engine and type in Wayne Madsen. That's Wayne Madsen, H1N1 biological warfare, and you'll pick up the articles there from Wayne Madsen, who we have interviewed. And of course, he's been told, you know, that a high-ranking UN scientist and high-ranking scientists from the World Health Organization have been afraid to come forward themselves and tell the truth because so many scientists have died under mysterious circumstances. He didn't say that's my comment, but they've been afraid to come forward. But in this article, and we'll be glad to send you a copy of it, Wayne Madsen points out that these scientists said the H1N1 virus had to be manufactured, certainly in a laboratory, because there are too many vectors, too many things there that would not occur ordinarily. So this is a manufactured virus. It's a manufactured epidemic. And so why is it being brought out at this time? Is there another agenda? And my concern it is. Now, it could be they just want to make a lot of money for the drug companies. It could be this is a great diversion. Could be they want to create chaos. Or it could be that they're going to add squalene to this product. But we do not know. And now it's a little over, well, it's 15 days until I guess it's 17 days until the massive vaccination program comes about. They're going to target pregnant women and children. Why? There are no studies that show it's safe there. This is where it'll do the maximum amount of harm because it contains mercury. And they're going to have to take two shots of that and then a shot of the regular flu vaccine that contains mercury. And there is no safe dose of mercury. We tell pregnant women they shouldn't eat fish because it may contain a small amount of mercury, and then roll up your sleeve and we'll give you a large dose of mercury. They've recommended the influenza vaccine for every pregnant woman when it'll do the most harm to the mind of the child in her womb. And, of course, you have to understand there are evil and wicked people out there. If you haven't yet seen the DVD by our good friend Russell Blaylock, who incidentally is going to be our guest one evening this week, why, his DVD, Vaccines and Brain Development, is vitally important. Along with Dr. David Ayoub's DVD, Mercury Autism and the Global Vaccine Agenda. Mercury Autism and the Global Vaccine Agenda. And did you ever wonder why it was that Bill Gates, who wants population control, is financing vaccinations throughout the world of the little brown and black children? We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and if you're out there in the listening audience, you'd like to give us a call, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and would like to get your thoughts on what we're talking about. But I am deeply concerned that there may be a population control agenda behind this H1N1 vaccination program, because certainly there's no justification for it as far as the danger of the disease. We know what happened back in 1976 when they actually gave the swine flu vaccine to 44 million people with no justification. And of course, the reason that they did that was supposedly the swine flu epidemic was going to strike. One person died. One person died of swine flu, and at least according to Mike Wallace, who did a 60-minute program at that time, 300 people died of the vaccine, and about 500 people got it. Guillain-Barré, which is an ascending paralysis, and of course many of those people never recovered. If you want, of course, to see a great 60-minute program, you can go to www.nvic.org, www.nvic.org, and there, of course, you can pull down, just scroll down the page to the 1976 flu vaccine video. That's the 1976 flu vaccine video. You've got to see this. You've got to get everybody you know to see it. You can see how they were trying to whip up the hysteria. They have all the ads that were run at that time by 60 Minutes to show the propaganda program that was carried out at that time to frighten the people into taking the swine flu vaccine with disastrous results. And those are just the results we know of. We don't know how many other people were injured by the aluminum in the vaccine, how many people were injured by the other animal vaccines, because ordinarily something like this would be grown in, say, the egg yolk of a chicken. And that would give you all the chicken viruses. Ordinarily a chicken virus is not going to infect you. But when we inject it into you and bypass the normal immune system, then you suddenly become a manufacturing base for growing animal viruses. This is what happened with the polioviruses. We got all the viruses of the rhesus monkey, and then they changed to the green monkey, and we got all the viruses of the green monkey. And of course, we are just filled with animal viruses that have been introduced into the human body by the vaccines, and they go from generation to generation. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we do hope many of you will even want to get a copy of this talk. Certainly, we talked through the break there, but I think it's vitally important you know the latest information about this swine flu vaccine. We have a great 4-tape set on the swine flu vaccine. Actually, it's 4-CD set. If you want to get it, call us at 1-800-544-8927. Our latest the newsletter, it won't be out probably for maybe 10 days, 2 weeks, is on the swine flu vaccine, but we want you to get it and copy it. But what you can do right now to explain to people, there really are people out there who have a genocidal agenda. They held a meeting in June there in New York City to plan on population control. And you can go to your search engine and type in billionaires, New York City, population control, June 2009, something like that, but billionaires, New York, population control, and 2009, understand that they were meeting there. They're laying out a plan to kill off most of the people in the world. Ted Turner said he wanted to kill off, certainly well over 98% of the people. He wanted to get the world population down to 200 million. He sort of changed that and said maybe we could let 2 billion live, but they're making their plans. Sydney, who is it who's paying to store the seeds up above the Arctic Circle? Why, it's Bill Gates and the Rockefeller Foundation and Monsanto. Why are they storing those seeds up above the Arctic Circle? Why, so they'll have the seeds when we start over again. When we start over again, when you understand that, it all begins to make sense. We're dealing with organized evil. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or seen my talk, it's available on CD, or heard the tape, we have it on audio tape, and the 4-tape set on the secret government. But of course, if you don't have the funds, short on funds, go to our website of RadioLiberty.com and simply scroll down to videos and scroll down to videos of Brotherhood of Darkness and prepare to sit there for 2 hours and watch me talk. And you don't want to hear me talk, but the information is vitally important. The only reason I'd recommend that you do it is because you need to know what's going on. And then, of course, go to our website, RadioLiberty.com, and pull down the population control agenda. This is up there. It's on the front page. You'll see a reference to it. Copy it and hand it out. And, of course, the Brotherhood of Darkness will tell you that there are evil people who work in a coordinated effort in our country. The population control agenda will show you that these people, of course, are dedicated to killing off the majority of the people in the world. Because this is what evil people do. And why do you think that all of these people, every single one of them in one way or another, tied into the occult, these billionaires all met together in New York City in June? But check it out. You don't have to take what I say. Fortunately, we have the Internet. How long we'll have it, I don't know. But your job is to get the information. You're welcome to copy the population control agenda and duplicate it. Or if you get, you can buy it in bulk from us and hand them out like lollipops. We need the people to know that there really is an agenda to kill off most of the people in the world? Do you think it was simply accidental that they infected 2 billion people with hepatitis B? Just accidentally by the vaccine program? They just forgot to use clean needles? Do you think that was an accident? 60,000 people die every year, certainly of hepatitis B, unnecessarily. They die of the complications of it, thanks to the vaccination program. Vaccines are a very convenient mean to spread daily deadly diseases. And we're dealing with people who know exactly what they're doing. You need to get my talk on planned population control, or planned population reduction is the exact title. Planned population reduction, none dare call it genocide, and population control. You need to get our 4-tape set on population control, and you need to let people understand that there